Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good afternoon to you. It's wonderful to be in your company this afternoon, a glorious, beautiful, warm Wednesday here in the Highveld. It is fantastic weather outside, beautiful, bright, sunny skies. It's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to be alive. It's an honor to be around and to be able to talk to you today and to share some thoughts with you as we are today on the 18th day of Tammuz. 18th day of Tammuz. Well, everybody likes the number 18, don't we? The number 18 is the number of Chai. It is the number of life. And so how do we bring life on this day into this month of Tammuz, which otherwise, certainly from yesterday onwards, becomes a little bit bleak and a little bit upsetting and a little bit sad, because there are all sorts of calamitous things that happened during this time. But perhaps what we're going to share with you today is how Jews are supposed to look at calamitous times. How are we supposed to look at sad and negative things that happen to us? Whether it's the breaking of the tablets, whether it is the breaching of the walls of Jerusalem, whether it is actually building up to Tisha B'Av and times of destruction of the Bote Migdash or the temples. I had a privilege about a week ago to be in Israel and to be able to stand there once again and gaze at the awesomeness of the Temple Mount and the awesomeness of the Western Wall, of the Wailing Wall, of the Kotel, and to be able to be there and to kind of take in that Kedusha, that holiness that one feels, of course, whenever you go there. And I think particularly at the moment, it's a little bit quieter than usual, not so many tourists around, but a very, very personal kind of experience that you can have today if you go to the Kotel, kind of at the off-peak times, and stand there and kind of bask in the glory of the Jewish people over thousands of years. And yes, it's sad. Yes, we rent our clothes when we go there. And yes, we are in a state of destruction, that we look at the temple and it's destroyed. However, as we always know, there are two ways of looking at that. You know, if you want to build a new house, not only do you have to make sure that the foundations are strong enough, but you also have to make sure that whatever existed on that place before is actually gone from there, is removed from there. And you might say, well, we're building a brand new home, and people come along and they see people with jackhammers and axes and choppers and hammers, and they're knocking down the walls. The breaking down of walls, sad as it may seem for those who remember the past, it is exciting because it means that there is going to be a brand new building standing on that spot very, very soon, a brand new home, a brand new house of God standing on the Temple Mount, please God, very soon with the coming of Mashiach. So we enter into this phase of time, this period of time that we do every year, and it is called the 3 weeks. And we all know that 3 weeks is 21 days. It doesn't take anybody too smart to be able to work that one out. 3 weeks, 21 days. There is a deep and profound and beautiful significance in the 3 weeks. Today, of course, is the day on which the golden calf was destroyed. So why are we talking about things that were destroyed today in 1313 before the Common Era? So that is 3,337 odd years ago, the golden calf was destroyed on this day. If we think about the history of the whole story, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, left to go up the mountain as soon as the Torah was given to us. The next morning he departed. Now that would have been the seventh day in the month of Sivan. He was gone for 40 days and 40 nights. He told the people he'll be away for 40 days and 40 nights, but they took it from the time that he told them, not from the time that he departed, and therefore came to the day before he was due back. They expected him back. There were no communications via WhatsApp or messages from the top of the mountain to the Jewish people to say exactly when he would be back. And he failed to return. They felt that, or they thought that he was gone, and they came to Aaron and they said, we need a go-between. We couldn't tolerate the talking to God directly as we saw at Mount Sinai. We needed the go-between. Moshe Rabbeinu was our go-between. He is gone now. We need something else. Let's replace him. And of course, that led to the building, the making of the golden calf. Aaron tells the people, tomorrow we will have a festival for God. He was still in the frame of mind that this was going to be something good, that they were going to be able to utilize this for the worship of God. But in the morning, the people were worshiping it. They were bowing down to the golden calf, dancing around it, turning it into their God and saying that this is what took us out of Egypt. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu descends. He comes down the mountain. It is 40 days after the 7th of Sivan. Yes, easy to work that one out as well. 40 days after the 7th of Sivan is the 17th of Tammuz. That was yesterday. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, descends the mountain. He comes down. He sees the people worshipping the golden calf. We'd got it tipped him off about that one already. And he realizes that he's holding in his hands the incriminating evidence. He's holding in his hands the Torah, which he is going to obligate and make the people suffer the consequences of breaking God's law unless he does something to take it away. And he breaks the tablets. He lets them fall to the ground. They break, they smash. And calamitous as it is, it saves the Jewish people from being held responsible for breaking the law of God. And that all happened yesterday. Sad, calamitous, but with a twist of great kindness on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu, great leadership. And then today, the next day, Moshe destroyed the golden calf. He reascends Mount Sinai to plead God's forgiveness for the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu's attitude is not one of punishment, but rather, how do I get this people back to where they should be? How do I get them to return? How do I get them back to worshiping God and not a golden calf? And he is gone once again for 40 days and 40 nights and comes back down to tell them that, wow, I'm going now up again for another period of 40 days and 40 nights. So there's three periods of 40 days and 40 nights. There is the one from Shavuot up until the 17th of Tammuz. There's the second one from the 17th of Tammuz up until Rosh Chodesh Elul. And he says to them, now listen, don't make the same mistake again. Sound the shofar. Let everybody know that today I am leaving. This is the time of my departure. We have that custom still today that on Rosh Chodesh Elul we sound the shofar. I'll be back, and I'll be back with the new tablets of stone, with the new set of the Ten Commandments, and that is going to be delivered on Yom Kippur. So from Shavuot to Yom Kippur, three periods of 40 days, 120 days, and we are now at the beginning of this second period. Today is the day of Moshe destroying the golden calf, reascending, and asking God for forgiveness for the entire Jewish people for the sin of the golden calf. So an awesome day today, and talking about breathing new life with Chai into a period of time, well, there is a starting point. It is a time to say, you know what, the calamities of yesterday are gone. Today we're starting with a brand new stretch, a brand new system, a brand new series of events, and a brand new time for all of us to be able to get closer to God, build up to the end of the calamities, and to much greater and more wonderful things.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, it's Rabbi Michael Katz here with Judaism 101.9, and great to be in your company. And we are talking about the 3 weeks, and we're talking about the 18th day of Tammuz, and we've been talking about the 17th day of Tammuz. Now, there's something hidden in the number 17, if we think about it. So we said before, we all know the number 18 is Yud plus Chet, which is 10 plus 8, which makes up 18, which is Chai, which is life. The number 17, by the way, if you take the number 17, it is Yud Zayin, 17. Now, 17 is also the gematria, the numerical value of Tov, which means good. So there is something hidden within the day of good. There is goodness that lingers beneath the surface. It may seem outwardly to have been a day of calamities. Yes, all those calamities of the destruction of the tablets of stone, of the destruction of the walls of Jerusalem leading to the overthrow of Yerushalayim 3 weeks later, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, or the temple on Tisha B'Av, the placing of an idol in the temple, the idea of a posthumous who burnt a Sefer Torah. All of these things, huge, terrible calamities that happened on that day, but there is something lingering beneath the surface. There is something of Tov within that date. You know, we could look at the same thing here. We think about the number 21. The number 21 being the number of days in these 3 weeks, as we mentioned right at the outset, right in the beginning, is not just by chance this concept of 21, but you know, 21 also isn't only the day of adult maturity, nor is it, do you remember the old days, those of you who were around in my era will remember that there was a game show on, I think it was on Springbok Radio, am I allowed to mention Springbok Radio on Chai FM, where they had a competition called 21. The first one to get to 21 points was the winner. It was a general knowledge kind of a test. So 21 is like a significant number, but it's a significant number in Judaism too. Now we think about the number 21, I guess, or the 21 days or the 3 weeks. That kind of gets stuck in our heads. But you know that our sages point out that the number 21 actually has a number of other very, very meaningful meanings. If we take the number 21 and we analyze this. Did you know that if we were to count in a certain way, I agree that it's in a certain way, if we count a certain amount of simcha, of joy, that is brought into the world through our chagim, through our festivals, our Shabbat, and our Rosh Chodesh concept, we have the number 21. Well, follow me on this. I know it's a little complicated. I know that it's taking a couple of poetic licenses, but just think about this. If we take Shabbat as being one day of Shabbat, and you take Rosh Chodesh, which is one day of Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of each month, and you take then the 7 days of Pesach, and you then say, well, after the 7 days of Pesach, we have one day of Shavuot. Remember that this is all biblical. We know that we've added on in the Gola, in the diaspora, there are extra days. So we've got so far the one day of Shabbos, the one day of Rosh Chodesh. We've got 7 days of Pesach. We have then one day of Shavuot. We then go to 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. We then have one day of Yom Kippur. And we add to that 7 days of Sukkot. And then we add to that the one day of Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah. Well, now let's think about it. So we've got one day of Shabbos, one day of Rosh Chodesh, 7 days of Pesach, one day of Shavuot, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, 1 day of Yom Kippur, 7 days of Sukkot, and 1 day of Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah. Guess what that adds up to? If you add all of that together, 1 + 1 + 7 + 1 + 2 + 1 + 7 + 1, 21. There are 21 positive influences in our year. 21 great days of Simcha. Yes, I know there are many Shabboses, and yes, I know there are many Rosh Chodeshes, but let's look at them all as one. There are 21 influences of simcha, of joy, in a world, in a time, in a year, where we often, too often, think about the 21 negative days of the 3 weeks. So think about this. You know, a couple of weeks ago, in the Parsha, we were reading about Korach and Machloikas, arguments. An argument that the Mishnah tells us was not l'shem shamayim, it wasn't for the sake of heaven. Negative connotations throughout Korach's argument. All it was about was, why are you the leader and not me? I should be there, not you. It was a jealousy, it was angry, and it was disruptive, and it brought into question God's appointment of Aaron HaKohen, of Aaron as the high priest. It was challenging. It wasn't only challenging Moses and Aaron, but it was challenging God, and it was certainly challenging the Jewish people. What does God tell Moshe and Aaron to do in order to prove the efficacy, in order to prove the standout of Aaron, of Aaron, as the leader of the priesthood, as the spiritual leader of Am Yisrael? How is that proved? What is done? Well, there are a couple of things, but one of the main ones that we'll all think about is that each tribe, each leader, had to present a stick, a staff. And on that stick, they had to write their names. And the names on those sticks, dry sticks, staffs, imagine up to a walking stick, that kind of a thing, that they had to take, and they placed it randomly It was put into the Mishkan, it was put into the tabernacle, and in there, in that place, Aaron's stick on which he wrote his name was in and amongst them. It wasn't in any kind of order, we're told. It was random. And what happened? Overnight, Aaron's stick blossomed. Not only did it have blossoms, it had buds. And not only did it have buds, but it actually was growing almonds. There were almonds that were growing. So these blossoms and these buds and these almonds, all the others were exactly as they were when they were placed in. And this was taken as a great sign of how the prowess of the spiritual leadership of the Jewish people was vested in Aaron HaKohen. He was the leader. He was the leader of the tribe. And we all know the history of what then happened to Korach and his people, and how this proof was taken to be something incredible and dramatic. And you have to ask yourself, in amongst all the questions that are asked about this fascinating display of a great miraculousness, why dafka almonds? Why wasn't it apples or peaches or any other fruit? Why dafka almonds? Well, there are some amazing things about almonds that we need to bear in mind. Number one is, the Talmud tells us that almonds take 21 days from when it blossoms until it ripens. Now, yes, this happened overnight, and yes, it was miraculous in the story of Korach, but the concept of an almond is literally that it is a 21-day fruit from the blossom to the fruit, the quickest growing fruit that you can think of. Here you have the almond. Almond, 21 days. It's incredible. So we think about, in terms of Talmudic expression about almonds, the idea of the 21 days. 21 days comes to the fore once again. But it's not only that. The almond, actually, we're told, the famed Gaon of Rogachev, the Rogachev Gaon, who was Rabbi Yosef Rosen, who lived from 1858 to 1936, he writes that inherent in God's warnings to Yirmiyahu, where Yirmiyahu is told about the blossoming of the almonds, and we're going to read that in during the 3 weeks in one of the Haftorahs of the next 3 weeks. We have the Rogachev Gaon telling us that almonds start off bitter and become sweet as they develop. In contrast to other nuts, especially the ones that are called luz, which start off sweet and becomes bitter. So we think about the almond. It has this significance of 21 days, but it also has the significance of starting off bitter, and as it ripens, it becomes sweeter. Now, if we take that as an underlay, if we take that beneath the surface, the good that is behind the 17th of Tammuz and the beginning of this blossom, let's call it, of these 3 weeks, it is something that we can turn from being sadder and sadder and sadder, as we unfortunately do think about these 3 weeks as we go from one level of mourning into another, and we get kind of deeper and deeper into the 9 days and then eventually into Tisha B'Av. We can think about the way that it is really meant to be, certainly in the future and beneath the surface, and something that we should be thinking about and dreaming about and trying to bring to fruition, to borrow the phrase of bearing fruit. It is the idea, of course, of going from bitterness to sweetness, and the idea of utilizing all the power and energy that we have from a spiritual point of view to bring about this fundamental change, that these 3 weeks can change from being days of sadness into days of joy, that the blossoming of the fruit can be as quick as the blossoming of the almond, and if not for 21 days, may it come very, very speedily, just like the blossoming of the stick of Aaron, showing that leadership of the priesthood once again, which we hope to have functioning in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple that we look forward to being rebuilt very speedily in our time. So this is a period of time where we are in a state of sadness, of mourning, You will notice that on these shows we're playing a cappella music, because one of the things that we're not allowed to do is listen to music. And of course, the idea of not listening to music is that it is associated with simcha. We also do not have weddings taking place during these 3 weeks. The screws get tightened and more signs of mourning come in with the beginning of Av in another 10 days or so time, where we 8 days time, where we have the advent of the month of Av, and Mishenichnas Av Mema'atim B'Simcha, our Simcha level drops again. But we've got to remember that the only reason for the mourning is because there is going to be a brand new dawning. There is going to be a brand new morning without the U, without thinking about the negative. The latent goodness that lurks behind the 17th of Tammuz in its gematria of good, and the idea of the 21 days, rather than being times of mourning, where we know that it led from the siege of Jerusalem to the destruction of the temple, that rather we are looking at how this is going to be turned around, and it's going to be like the blossoming of the sticks and the flourishing of those almonds, the fruits that are going to be born from there. It's going to get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter as the days go by. And please God, very, very soon, we will have that great joy coming to the fore, even during this time.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, Rabbi Michael Katz here, back with you on Judaism 101.9, and great to be with you. We are talking about the 3 weeks, and we're talking about the 21 days, and we've been talking about the 17th and the 18th of Tammuz. Well, I want to stay in my lane. I don't want to take away from anybody else's shows, and therefore I hope I don't get into trouble for referencing the Parsha of this coming week, just very briefly, you know, in Parshat Pinchas, that we always read in the 3 weeks, and usually right at the beginning of the 3 weeks, we have the enumeration of all the chagim, of all the festivals. Well, there you have it. All the festivals and everything that we mentioned before, the 21 days that they all add up to, of the positive energy, that is brought into the 3 weeks. That is the underlying theme. That's really below the surface and what we should really be reaching to achieve. But in the interim, we need to show our mourning for the temple. We need to know that is what we have lost, so that we can really look forward to regaining it. We've got to be able to feel the pain in order to make the gain, I guess. So what do we do during this period of time, or what don't we do? We don't conduct weddings. We don't have wedding celebrations at all. Engagement parties, by the way, without music are allowed until Rosh Chodesh Av. We do not play musical instruments, just if you are strumming a guitar, etc., or listen to music. And this is much more particularly difficult or problematic if it is live music, if it's incidental music in the background in a shopping mall or at the back of an ad or whatever. I don't think one needs to worry about it. We do not recite the Shehecheyanu, a blessing, the bracha that we say on something new and thanking God for saving us and bringing us to this occasion. So we do not wear new clothing or eat fruit which we've not yet eaten this season, so that we shouldn't be required to say that bracha Shehecheyanu. We also do not take haircuts or shave. Now, many Sephardi communities permit haircuts and shaving until the week of Tisha B'Av, but the Ashkenazi custom is not to do so for the duration of these 3 weeks. Now, there is an exception to many of the laws of mourning, and that is Shabbat. On all the Shabbats, on all the Shabbases that will occur during the 3 weeks, and there are usually three of them, the laws of mourning are suspended on Shabbos. In fact, there are many who say that on those Shabboses, we should go out of our way to be even more joyous than usual. And we make sure that there is a clear differentiation between Shabbos and the other days of the week, because it's on these days of Shabbat that we have a taste of Me'ein Olam Haba. We're living on Shabbos in a kind of a futuristic Mashiach time, kind of a an atmosphere, an attitude, and therefore we move into that space during Shabbos, and we do not show any type of mourning whatsoever. We need to, during this time, have a determination to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Now, how do we do that? Well, we've got to fix up all the things that went wrong in the past. Yes, temples were destroyed and sadness came about because of idol worship. We've got to make sure that we're not worshipping idols. Now, you and I probably don't have an inclination to go and worship a golden calf, I should hope, or any of the other things that we would deem to be idols. But there's a fair amount of idol worship in our lives, if we think about it. We worship, we idolize people, we sometimes idolize money, we sometimes idolize ourselves, and we need to remember that that could all be part of the Avodah Zarah, of the idol worship that we're talking about. Number two, we need to look forward to the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, of the temple. Lubavitcher Rebbe used to encourage that people should learn during this period of time all about the Beit HaMikdash, all about the temple, how it's going to be in the third Beit HaMikdash in the temple, what it stood for, what went on there, what kind of offerings were brought there, the sacrifices and so on, and studying it and getting our heads into that space is certainly a very, very good leader and attraction for each and every one of us to move forward into the positive energy of knowing what it is that we're missing and what we need to try and regain. Now, we know that fasting and lamentation, difficulties that we place ourselves in, as we did yesterday when we said the supplication prayers, and we are involved in fasting and so on, is supposed to bring us to a state of repentance. It's supposed to turn our hearts. It's supposed to give us an opportunity to think, to contemplate about how we can fix, rather than being sunken into and bound to this difficulty of being pulled down in mourning and in sadness. We need to think about how we can rise up, how we can stand up, how we can be positive, and how we can move out of the space into a space and a place where we are going to welcome Mashiach. We're going to have the third Beit HaMikdash, the temple, rebuilt, and we're going to move into a time of peace, joy, and happiness. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Welcome back. Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. Great to be in your company. And we're coming towards the end of our discussion about the 3 weeks, about this period of mourning, this period of sadness. It all culminates in 3 weeks' time with Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of Av. Now, we've spent some time here talking about the 18. We've spoken about the 17. We've spoken about the 21 days of these 3 weeks. How about the number 9? Have we ever thought about, you know, at your Pesach Seder, at the end of the Seder, many people have the tradition to sing the song of Echad Mi Yodea, who knows one, who knows one, who knows two, who knows three. And, of course, we are triumphant in knowing all the way through to 13. Well, what is the number 9? Yeah. What's the most famous number 9 in Jewish life? 9 are the months of the pregnancy. The number 9 we do not associate with Tisha B'Av as much as we associate it with something positive, the concept of pregnancy, of birth. Isn't that a fascinating and beautiful thought to have about the ninth of Av, Tisha B'Av, simple idea. We're told that it's on Tisha B'Av, on the ninth of Av, that Mashiach will be born. We're told that Mashiach, if he's born already, will be revealed on the ninth of Av, Tisha B'Av. We're talking about the idea of how we can take the ninth of Av, which is steeped in sadness, the destruction of not one but two Bate Migdash, the difficulties that befell our people when they believed in the spies who came back with a bad report of about Israel before we even got there in the very first place, in the time that we were in the desert. All of these things culminating and informing and making a day of calamity, of sadness, of tragedy, the ninth of Av, Tisha B'Av, such a sad, sad time. And yet, the ninth of the nine, the number 9, is all about the concept of pregnancy and birth. And isn't that really where we should be focusing? So yes, while we're in a state of mourning, let's think about what it is that we're missing and what we can look forward to. And if we think about it in these positive terms, about the almonds that are going to blossom and flourish, about the 21 days of great and wonderful things that start with the number 17, which is Tov, which is good, and culminate in the number 9, which is all about birth and the rebirth. These are the things that we need to focus on, think about, and look forward to during this period of time. So yes, let's move away from hatred, from negativity, from fighting, from all the negative things that sometimes drive us crazy and make the whole world crazy. And let's move towards the things that are going to bring about Achdus, that are going to bring about unity, that are going to bring about a togetherness, that are going to bring about peace, joy, and happiness, so that the 21 days of sadness can be turned into 21 days of joy. 3 weeks of sadness, and we turn them into 3 weeks of joy and many, many more joyous and wonderful days to follow thereafter. So I look forward to being back with you, same time, same place, next week. And in the meantime, I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbos, a great Shabbat up ahead, and take good care of yourselves.